Coming today on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
In terms of dealing with that specific type of personality profile, a lot of people that engage with it try to apply and utilize traditional approaches of, you know, crisis negotiations, conflict de-escalation tactics, et cetera, et cetera. And that doesn't work for this particular group.
So the big questions are these. How can we navigate and negotiate every situation in our lives, in our career, in our businesses, in our relationships, and even with ourselves for our own self-worth? In other words, what if you could win every time and have no losers? Let's face it, we're not negotiating just to buy a car or for a pay raise. We are negotiating for living in every aspect of our lives. How can we do that powerfully, successfully, and victoriously? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Rebecca Zung, and welcome to the time where you negotiate your best life. Welcome to today's show of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung. I'm really, really, really thrilled to bring you an incredible guest today. His name is Calvin Krusty, and he is a master negotiator in his field. He's worked in hostage negotiations and worked with the federal government and the United Nations to deal with POWs and kidnappings and all sorts of high-end terrorist, high-conflict zones. And so he really understands how to deal with negotiation and high conflict during crisis, and especially when you feel like you're under siege and you're in crisis. He knows exactly what to do and how to get yourself centered and how to plan and actually get to a position where you feel like you are the one in control. So thank you so much, Calvin. I cannot wait to have this conversation with you.
Thanks very much, Rebecca. I'm looking forward to it as well.
So tell us, how did you come into the profession of negotiating with difficult people in crisis, and what kinds of difficult people have you dealt with?
Well, I originally came from the policing profession, and early in the profession, I found that I had a certain aptitude, perhaps, in terms of dealing with the criminal element and people with nefarious backgrounds that others had difficult communicating and dealing with. And that just evolved in terms of some context opportunities where I, again, went from the policing world to United Nations peacekeeping and was dealing with warlords and others in, as you put, high conflict situations that were driven by high emotions, history, culture, and horrible relationships. And I, again, felt that I had an aptitude and met with some success in that area, which kind of spurred me to kind of focus my career starting about three decades ago in the area of negotiations and conflict management. And so I pursued a career that included that and pursued my academic studies in that area and built up a large network of professional associates and continued doing that in a whole host of environments and contexts, ranging from doing negotiations with terrorists to dealing with protest groups to dealing with war situations to indigenous conflicts, natural resource disputes, to inclusive of dealing with family-related disputes and that, and hostage situations.
Amazing. So people who are dealing with narcissists and trying to negotiate with narcissists in either family settings, divorce settings, or even with, I have people who contact me from all over the world, narcissistic business partners, colleagues, maybe it's a boss, what are the key personal attributes to difficult people? Sometimes they're actually diagnosed as narcissists. In my opinion, if somebody even haven't been diagnosed as a narcissist, whether they've actually been diagnosed or not, it really doesn't matter. If they are extremely difficult to deal with, right? So what are the key attributes of these?
Well, I think the first attribute is they're different than, the vast majority of people that we deal with, which in itself poses a problem, because in terms of dealing with that specific type of personality profile, a lot of people that engage with it try to apply and utilize traditional approaches of, crisis negotiations, conflict de-escalation tactics, et cetera, et cetera. And that doesn't work for this particular group. And I'll defer to your expertise specifically on the narcissistic personality. While I'm familiar with them, I probably don't consider myself clinically an expert in them. But number two is they're super high conflict, thrive on conflict, and where the vast majority of the population, 95% of the population, or whatever, a lot of them are conflict avoidance personalities and try to avoid conflict. So the whole strategy and your approach in terms of dealing with them is very different than the motivation of them in terms of what motivates them in terms of their actions, so that you can have a predictive analysis in terms of what their next step is going to be in the negotiation process. I think you just have to be aware that they're going to be, looking and seizing opportunities to have additional conflict with you, because that's how they thrive and that's how they feel better in terms of self-satisfaction, esteem, et cetera, et cetera. So those are kind of some of the primary differences that those type of people have in terms of the negotiation process.
Yeah. So I totally agree with you. They thrive on this conflict. And so, the people who are conflict avoidant, you're already in two different places, right?
Yeah.
And so what happens when somebody is in crisis? What does that mean to you when you say that you deal in crisis negotiations? What's going on with the person?
Well, the whole context of the situation is highly emotional. And, when it comes down to as it applies to a negotiation response or engagement with higher levels of emotions, in our business in the hostage negotiation world, that usually one of the number one considerations we have is accepting that people, whether it be ourselves, or whether it be the people that we're negotiating with, are emotional setting or state quite often has a negative impact in terms of, one, our strategic thinking, number two, our rationalized decision-making, and then it becomes important in terms of managing that, mitigating that, some way, and there's a number of ways of doing that to try to remove the negative elements of the crisis away to allow for, say, a more strategic and effective negotiation process.
Yeah, I agree. And so what's the nature of the risk with these types of negotiation when people are in crisis and trying to?
Well, I think that just generally speaking, bad decisions, in terms of emotionally driven decisions versus ones based on logic, rational thinking and strategic objectives and that. And it becomes you know, when you're in that highly emotional state, it's very reactive, responsive, and driven by emotions. And emotions sometimes aren't always, you know, aren't always aligned with what your strategic outcomes are in a negotiation process. So, you know, going back to, you know, what is mentioned a few minutes ago, the importance of somehow removing or at least mitigating or managing those emotional dynamics in the negotiation process, I think are extremely important.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, even taking it a step further than that, it's, you know, you end up just doing, at least what I've seen over my 20 years as a divorce attorney, is that people will just, they just want to be done. They just want to settle. They just want this over. They want to be out of crisis. And so they'll just agree to things that they need to just to feel better in that moment. And then almost immediately regret agreeing to what they agreed to. You know, it might be, you know, a week later, a month later, 6 months later. But what I tell people is that, you know, that closure that you were looking for, the reason why you just settled to begin with, you're not going to get that peace of mind because it will be replaced by a different form of self-torture. Is now you're going to be feeling like you were pushed into it, or you did it just because you just wanted it to be over. And it's, you know, it's terrorist tactics, right? You know, you've dealt with terrorists, you've dealt with hostages. Yep. It's, you know, do this or I'm going to make your life a living hell in some way. And so you think, okay, let me just do it. But then you're in your own hell because you were...
Yeah, and Rebecca, that's why in most of the situations that I've been involved in, where there's high stakes crisis situations, including dealing with, you know, difficult people in a family setting, I think having a plan, having a strategy, and clearly identifying at the front end what your strategic objectives and desirable outcomes are at the front end, and just whatever process that you're following, that you adhere to them and you don't deviate from those, regardless of the emotional pressure, tactics, et cetera, and it becomes a bit of a compass, you know, and anchoring you in terms of where you want to go. And at the end of it, regardless of the emotional battles that are in the process, you're more likely, as you alluded to, are going to be content, happy, and satisfied with the final outcome if you identify those objectives at the front end. And that's how I try to mitigate the influence of pressure, emotions, stress, anxiety, and the overall crisis situation, is by just having a written roadmap for it.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I do in my SLAY program, by the way. The very first thing I have people do is figure out what outcome that they want, because sometimes they actually haven't even thought that through. They're in just such crisis. They're in such defense mode against this attack that they're constantly under that they actually haven't even thought about, what do I want? What's my goal and objective here? Where do I want to be when this thing is over? If I got to paint the picture, what would that look like? And then keeping your eye on that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you're dealing with narcissists and, you know, similar type, you know, personality disorders in a negotiation process, I think it's so important to have that. And I think so many people engaged in the negotiation process, including lawyers, sometime, you know, rely on the legal processes and make the presumption that there's two parties involved in it. And well, it may occur on a very regular basis that both parties just want it over with and just want a fair settlement and want to move on with their lives. When you're dealing with these other type of personalities, that's not what it's about. And there's incongruent interest at the end of it. You know, if you go into the whole interest-based negotiations model of negotiations, which most family lawyers and other people use, it doesn't work that well in terms of going, hey, what's your interest? What's your interest? There's a presumption that you have to be honest, genuine, and sincere in that process. And that isn't what you're going to find in this particular situation when you're dealing with narcissists and other high conflict personalities. They're not going to be transparent about it. And your interests are going to be so incongruent where one wants fair resolution and the other one wants to destroy and torture you.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I mean, they have different goals, different ethics, really. I mean, because narcissists are street fighters. Yeah. I mean, they fight dirty.
Yeah.
So they'll do whatever they need to if they think they can get away with it. And even more than they think, I mean, they're always pushing the boundaries of what they can get away with. So, you're on totally different planes, different values and belief systems.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, one person is trying to look for a reasonable, peaceful resolution, and the other person is out to destroy the other person.
I hate to say it, but it does have some similarities in terms of 25 years in and out of war zones dealing with extremist groups and just the as you framed it, the value systems and belief systems are very, very different, almost irreconcilable in terms of those differences. And a whole different type of approach has to be taken, right? And that whole, in that whole negotiation world, I sense, through my experience working with people in the legal world, many rely on the interest-based model of negotiations. And I don't know if it's that effective. And I know it wasn't effective dealing with extremists and terrorist groups. It has limited value there, and other tactics, strategies have to be applied, to be effective in terms of dealing with it.
Coming up, more on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
The resolution is difficult. I think there is strategies and topics that are going to be much more helpful in terms of accelerating the process and also to mitigate the conflict in the process.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp can assist you today with your own licensed professional therapist, private, online, super convenient. You're communicating in less than 24 hours, no waiting room, no leaving your house even. And they are committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. So it's easy to change therapists if you need to change therapists. They can help you if you're wherever you are in the world, worldwide, with anything such as depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anger, family conflicts. Anything you share is confidential, super convenient, affordable. I want you to start living a happier life today. And so as a listener, you get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/breakingfree. Join over 800,000 people by taking charge of your mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/breakingfree.
Are you struggling with how to negotiate and win? Maybe you're dealing with a personality that's particularly challenging, like a narcissist or other high conflict personality, and you're feeling powerless. Make sure to download my free Win My Negotiation cheat sheet at www.winmynegotiation.com.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can listen to more episodes that show you the path to how to negotiate your best life.
I can tell you for sure for myself, I sure as heck didn't enjoy dealing with a couple of narcissists that I had to deal with in my life. They were horrible, and they brought back memories of being bullied as a child and all kinds of stuff. But you will be a better person for it, and we are all here on this planet to grow. We are all here to become the best people that we can.
And now we return to today's show.
I understand what you mean by interest-based, but can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, going back to the Harvard business school model of negotiations, where, you know, you identify, you know, originally what the positions are, and then focus on what the interests are and try to find, you know, a collaborative process to go where the overlapping interests are to get to your resolution, you know, in a very kind of short summary description of it. And those processes, you know, which is like very, you know, fundamental to collaborative law and family law. And, but when it comes down to narcissistic personalities, it's just not the right fit in terms of a process that's going to be overly effective. And other considerations, you know, I think have to be incorporated in that. And I've found that, you know, in my career, whether it's been in the family situation or dealing with other difficult people that have other personality disorders, that one has to look at it different than, say, just applying that traditional interest-based model on resolving these personal conflicts.
Yeah. And so what are some things that you need to be aware of when you're dealing with, you know, perceived threats when you're in crisis? What are the perceived threats?
Well, I mean, as a practitioner dealing with them, I think having, you know, and I always say this, no matter which type, you know, whether it's dealing with a narcissist or whether it's dealing with a terrorist or whoever, you have to have a certain degree of humility or a high degree of humility in going, do you really understand what you're getting into? And do you know, do you have all the experience and all the skills to deal with that? And at least in my profession historically, very rarely do we ever advocate one person take on like an engagement that's complex, particularly like a high conflict situation where emotions are likely to impact all parties. It's almost impossible, you know, no matter how much experience you have, for it not to impact yourself. So one of the things we always recommend is, hey, whenever you're going into these situations, make sure that you're not going into these situations in terms of an engagement by yourself. So whether you're a lawyer, you know, consult with a psychologist or consult with somebody else, like a professional negotiator, or maybe a combination of both because of the complexity to it. If you haven't been involved in these particular situations before. So that's, those are some of the things that I would think about in terms of going into those situations would be it. And two, the second thing is, hey, managing yourself in those particular situations. They're very trying. I've been involved in this stuff for 25, 30 years. And the one thing that I've learned is that it's very difficult to manage the other party and you cannot control the other party. You may be able to influence the other party, but to actually control the other party, I think it's almost an impossibility. What you do have the ability to do is control yourself. And that's has to be a big focus in terms of when you're engaged in these processes and with these type of people, is the focus on managing yourself, whether it's, you know, like myself, you know, fitness, making sure you have a support network, taking time, you know, whether it be meditation or doing something that just provides a little bit of a balance in terms of your thinking and your state. And I, the more I've got exposed to it, the more traumatic incidents and situations I've been exposed to, the more I realized how important, you know, focusing on yourself and managing your own emotions is important in these situations.
Exactly. That's the why in my SLAY methodology as well. Yeah. So you touched on it a little bit, but what advice would you give people? I mean, let me just say this before I ask this question. A lot of people reach out to me and they say, I just need a good lawyer. That's what I need. Just send me the name of a good lawyer. What would you say to those people?
I would say my experience, and I've gone to law school. A lot of my friends are lawyers. I have a ton of respect for lawyers. But I would say my experience in terms of the profession, so to speak, they're highly focused in two out of three areas that are important to this. And I'll use this analogy as a triangle. One is on one side of the triangle is the process aspect of it. So they know the legal procedures in terms of dispute resolution in a family situation. They know, what timelines have to be done, what disclosure material may be done, how to apply for, the different initiatives in the legal proceedings. So that's process. The other one is they probably have a fair good idea in terms of the other part of that triangle, the substantive issues. What's fair in terms of, people's pensions, property equity, spousal support, child support. They know the substantive natures of it. But I think when you're dealing with this, that third aspect of it, and I apply this to all types of disputes that I get involved in, is that psychological / emotional part of that triangle. That's very specialized. And because the majority of the work doesn't involve highly emotional, high conflict people in these situations, I would say just make sure that you have, as you go forward with picking a lawyer, that you complement that by making sure that side of the triangle is void, whether it be, reaching out to people like yourself, engaging the use of a psychologist, and making sure, most and importantly, that lawyer that you're reaching out to is open to understanding that the problem of dispute resolution has three dimensions to it, not two. It's not process and it's not substantive only. And that's what I find quite often people refer to. And they think that the emotional, psychological aspect of it is secondary. When in dealing with these type of people, it's primary. And unless you incorporate strategies, tactics, and highly focused strategic approaches on dealing with that personality, I think you're going to be in for a long, painful ride. So that would be my advice, is making sure that third side of that triangle is filled, and that you have a lawyer that understands that and is open to making sure, if they aren't an expert in it, and there's not a lot of experts in it, that you fill it with outside third parties to assist and support the legal process.
Right, which is why I created the SLAE program, and what that does, it helps people fill in that third side, yeah. Because a lot of the work has to fall on you. You're the one that sits on the information, right? So let's talk about planning and preparing for dealing with the actual negotiation. What would you say to that?
Well, I have had conversations with lawyers in these type of settings where the conversation is, hey, this is really simple. Let's just follow the process. I've done hundreds of these and let's go. And then years into it, they realize with no resolution, something's missing. And what's missing, I think, is, at least coming from the world that I come from, is I rarely ever entered into a negotiation process without having a negotiation plan. And that includes, at the front end of it, identifying what your strategic objectives are, and then throughout the body of it. And I know you have your own methodology relative to it. I'm just sharing mine. And then having the body of the plan, outlining what the means are, some of the strategic considerations to achieving those objectives, and having a plan, right? But the plan should be also, you know, somewhat flexible and dynamic, you know, to some of the changing issues that arise in it. And in that plan, one of the things that I always include in that plan is having third-party supporters and, you know, to the process, so that it's done in a team environment. And whether that team environment means somebody that you consult with once or somebody that's, you know, engaged in the whole process, it's just making sure that you've identified those people in advance that are part of that plan and they're supporting it throughout.
So what would you say to somebody who says you can never win when you're dealing with a narcissist? There's no way they'll ever settle. You can never get them to come to any kind of resolution.
Well, I think it's the resolution is difficult. I think there is strategies and topics that are going to be much more helpful in terms of accelerating the process and also to mitigate the conflict in the process. It's just a matter of incorporating that and not relying on, for lack of a better term, a reactive / responsive approach, but being strategic and proactive in terms of dealing with it at the front end and throughout. And I think if people invest the time, money, and energy in terms of doing it, they're going to have a much easier ride and a much shorter ride through that process. But it's a matter of investing the time and energy in terms of doing it. But I think it's always going to be a difficult ride with that type of personality, because they are high conflict and they're going to be looking for it. And not everything is in, you know, one's own control. As we've talked about, you know, prior to this call, I think there's a lot of things that can be done to mitigate those risks.
So it is possible, of course.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. 100%.
Is there anything else that you would want to add to what we've already talked about?
I just think just not to add, but maybe just to reemphasize that these type of engagements in the negotiation process are not the norm. And one of the flags, I think, for anybody engaging in this process, whether a lawyer or a client or whoever it is, just relying on old standard processes going, well, I've done this 50 times before and I've been successful in it. If somebody's flagging the person as a high conflict, narcissistic, borderline personality type, possibly, that should send off a lot of alarm bells that if you want to save yourself a lot of grief, a lot of heartache, and a significant amount of financial expenses, put the time and the energy, you know, and reach out, do your research, and make sure that you've got the right team going forward with it. Otherwise, it could be a very painful process, as I've alluded to.
Wonderful. And where can people find out more about you if they wanted to engage you to help them going through this process like this?
Two ways. First way is I'm on LinkedIn and can be found on LinkedIn as well as my website, Strategic Solutions Group. And I guess the third one, if they're in contact with yourself, feel free if you want to refer them to myself to your level of comfort.
All right. I think that's fantastic. And, you know, you have such a wide range of expertise in this area, and it's so rare to find somebody who really understands this kind of high conflict personality. So I hope people hear what you say today and reach out and get the help that they need for that. I love the analogy of the triangle. I think that's so perfect. And get that help for that third side of that triangle. So thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a huge pleasure.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Thanks for stopping by and listening to this episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung.
Check back next Monday for more inspirational pearls of wisdom. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love if you would give it a 5-star rating and tell me what you liked in a review on iTunes. Also, be sure to grab your winning negotiation cheat sheet at winmynegotiation.com. And remember, today is a perfect day to start negotiating your best life.